part of my job are these training classes when I get to meet all of you. So some of you, this is your 3-year refresher class, so this is boring and you don't have to listen. or like yours, this is your 3, 6, 9, 12 year refresher class. In addition to this class, in order to get onto the volunteer gatehouse list to go into the institutions, you will also need to get a 2-step TB test, okay? So I'm gonna, if you're not familiar with what a 2-step TB test is, I'll try to explain. Most people get the antigen PPD skin test, which is when a little bit of serum is injected on the skin by a nurse or someone, and then you go back 2 days later and have it read, make sure there's no reaction. And then 1 week later, you go back and get another injection, and then 2 to 3 days later, you get another check. So it's 2 injections, 2 reads, 1 week apart. That's the test that most people get, okay? It's important that after that initial 2-step test, every year thereafter, within 365 days, you get another test. You have to have an annual test. If you get it done within 365 days, you only have to get a 1-step. That's 1 injection and 1 read. So that's why you want to really make sure that you get that done within a year's time so that you don't have to go back to having a 2-step, okay? Because that's really inconvenient. You might want to consider the QuantiFERON blood test. We can also accept that. This is all going to be explained to you on your copy, and you're going to get a copy of the packet that you signed. But on your copy of the volunteer packet, it's explained to you, okay, the 2-step antigen skin test. What I don't have on here is information about the QuantiFERON blood test. So, but I can't accept it. So when you go to get your TB test, if you are open to getting the blood test, you might want to, you know, ask them about the blood test. Because I know it's really interesting to take 4 trips to the clinic for a TB test. So I'm just throwing that out there. If you have any questions at all, please don't hesitate to give me a call. I'm always available to help. You know, give me a call, shoot me an email, whatever. Drop by and visit me in person like you always do. Because I'm open to that as well. So do we have any questions yet, as of yet, about the TB test?
Is there a recommended place or?
No, but there are lots of places that do the TB test. Walgreens, CVS, Quest Diagnostics, Centra, health centers. There's this place, it used to be called the Vaccine Center, it's now E7 Health or something like that. I hear that they're very reasonable. You just want to kind of call around to some various clinics, do a Google search or whatever, and, you know, find out who charges what, you know, how much, and, yes ma'am.
I've sent mine with the application.
Okay. Yeah, if you've already done it, then you're golden. Okay. Yeah. Sir?
You call around because people will go ahead and tell you, oh yes, we'll do TB tests, and then you get there and you realize it's only the 1-step, and that won't work if you haven't done it before. So make sure you ask about what it is you're asking for.
Get annual TB tests because maybe you're in healthcare or you're in education and it's required for your job, then you don't need to get the 2-step. I just need the 1-step annual, okay? So I hope that was a good care of that.
I'm confused.
Are you confused? I'm always confused. So.
Again, you want to do that prior to the year anniversary of the time you first take the first test?
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that?
Right.
Okay.
So on or before. So let's say it gets read on June 1st, okay? Your 2nd step is read on June 1st. That's the date that I'm going to enter into my database. So on or before June 1st of next year, you'll want to get your annual one-step TB test. I do my very best to send out an email when you're coming up due, maybe a couple of weeks before you're coming up due. If you're due in June, I try to send it out like May, mid-May, something like that. But with over 600 plus volunteers, it's, you know, sometimes somebody will fall through the cracks, or my email will end up in your junk mailbox and you won't get it. So between the two of us, let's keep track of when your TB test is due. So we can get that done, okay? Any other questions? Okie doke, I'm gonna hand it over to Officer Todd and get these certificates printed up.
Awesome.
And then we'll be good, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here.
Like you said, I am, believe it or not, the lead senior member of the training staff here in the Battery Department of Bridge. I have 1 year and 2 months. And having said that, I did retire from the state of Michigan. Got a brother in the back. At least right. Anybody else from Michigan? Better not be anybody from Ohio, right?
Well, no.
Filing, would you want to throw it back?
I got you.
Be Ohio. Okay. I retired from Marquette Branch Prison in Michigan. It was the end of the line prison. I've done 34 years of correction so far. I retired, came out here. My whole goal was to be the guy that washed your golf clubs during the winter. That's all the job I wanted. I ended up here again on accident. Got a lot of experience in corrections, obviously 34 years. I ended up as a captain out there, and I was a commander for ERT, which is our version of a SWAT team. The only press we get as good as the press that we create. So our director decided we were going to create these teams. And I could put 35 boots on the ground in a half hour to solve your problem. If you were pleased. 35.
Half a guy?
35 pair of boots.
Oh, pair of boots.
Yeah, we, like I said, we saved several people in the woods, found several escapees, and actually, I'm lucky enough to say that we've guarded two sitting presidents. So it wasn't a knuckle dragger kind of thing. We protected both Barack Obama and George Bush when it came to Marquette. So let's go ahead and get started with this show. Huh? And just so you know, at the end of the day, I apologize for my dress. Thankfully, I should be in a little nicer dress. But as soon as I leave here, I'm kind of conflicted. Lived in Michigan, but I'm originally from Denver. I have to go watch my Broncos kick the Raiders' butt. All right, let's talk about who we are as a department. And just so you know, I'm not the kind of trainer that will stand up in front of you. I got ADD, HD, so I like to move around a lot. Harder to stand that way too, right? As long as I keep moving. The Nevada Department of Corrections will improve our public safety. We do it by ensuring a safe and humane environment that incorporates proven rehabilitative initiatives that prepare individuals for successful reintegration into our communities. Prior to Mr. Surrenda being our director, you know what our mission statement was? Basically it said, we lock them up, we keep them locked up. We've changed quite a bit. Right? Our vision, we want to reduce recidivism and victimization by providing offenders with incentives for self-improvement and the tools to effect change. And I can lead that horse to water. I can't make a drink though, right? We'll give you the tools if you want to do it. We'll pursue our mission with integrity, act in a professional and ethical manner, be responsible for our actions, and raising the department to its highest standards. And our goals, like it says, is to operate the department according to the best practices. Ensure that the best use of our resources are done, and educate customers and stakeholders. Who's a stakeholder? You all are my stakeholders, right? Honestly, you pay my wage, right? So you are a stakeholder. Right? I live off taxpayers' backs. I love you people. I'm one too, right? But yeah, we should educate you about what goes on in our prisons. You think about it, our officers police a population that doesn't want to be policed. You hear all about the great things Metro do all the time, right? Saving people. Guess what? We do the same things. But we don't tell anybody. That's our biggest problem. We never educate anybody about what we do. We need to improve communications. Now, when you look at us, who we are and what we do, we are, like it says, the Department of Corrections. Our biggest problem is we have to balance security with programs. Security is always going to win out. Right? We provide motivation and opportunity for change. Our staff, like we have approximately 3,000 staff members, 2,000 are uniformed, 1,000 are non-uniformed, such as myself. If you don't wear a uniform, all you really are in my world is a force staff. Ensure that those that are wearing the uniform can carry out their mission, right, that we need. We're actually run by a board of prisons, right? Brian Sandoval is on the top. Sagatsky is there as well, Secretary of State, and our Attorney General, Adam Laxalt. Okay. Our director, so you know, James Renda, been around quite a while, over 3 decades of correction experience. Started in Connecticut, ended up running the Department of Connecticut through the years. I'm just paraphrasing this. He also then went to New York, where he became the first deputy commissioner, managed the operations of the 9 city jails. This included 14,000 staff members, 9,000 inmates, and $2.75 billion budget. That's a lot, huh? I'll give you a little statistic when you think about how much it costs to operate prisons. How much do you think California costs per day to run their prison system?
Very big, or what?
No, just the entire system. Per day? $36 million a day. It's expensive to operate.
How much money is still causes cancer?
All right, we have who we are. We have 9 major institutions. NSP opened up in 1861. It is closed. It was our first territorial prison. It got us started. And if you want a little history on it, it was a hotel when we first started as a territory. That's where the territorial legislature met in the 1860s. Hard to believe, right? A bunch of cowboys as legislatures getting all liquored up. They decided to shoot the hotel up and have a good old time. Well, in the morning, the gentleman that owned the hotel gave them the bill for that hotel. So they said, you know what? We got a really good idea. We're going to make this a prison. And we're going to make you the warden. So that's how our first prison started. It was also temporary. It has a little history to it. It's the only prison that had a licensed casino in it at one time. Yeah. Yeah, ever been there. It was a licensed casino.
It was also the first to employ
trendsetting
folks.
You know, they're using their last meal, right?
Well, Sinai.
Tombstone Pizza. Right. Warm Spring Correctional Center, opened in 1961. Northern Nevada, once again out to Carson City in 1964. SNCC. And Gene opened in 1977 and when it closed. I go there about once every 6 weeks and work, and it is haunted, by the way. We have one of those ghost hunter shows. SDCC, Southern Desert, Indian Springs, that's what I'm connected to. 1980, Ely State Prison, 1989, Lovelock in 1995, Florence McClure, our only female prison, 1997, and then High Desert, 2000. Also in Indian Springs. We also have some other institutions out and about. We have 9 conservation camps. Those are the gentlemen and ladies that you see on the side of the road picking up trash and moving things around. They're also the firefighters. And we have several crews I still think in California fighting fires right now. Stuart, once again up in Carson City area. Humboldt, way up there. Carlin's way, way up there. Nobody wants to work in Carlin. If you ever want a job, hire me. So far in the middle of nowhere. Ely has a camp, Pioche, Tonopah, and Indian Springs, we have the Three Lakes, and then Gene is the only female camp that we have. We still still have two other facilities. You're sitting in one of them, right? Casa Grande and Northern Nevada Transitional Housing, both the same thing. Our uniformed staff, like I said before, they are law, we are law enforcement agencies. They do have the power of arrest. They have the power to carry a weapon wherever they want. They are sworn Category 3 peace officers in the state of Nevada. When you look at inmates, we currently house 30,000 plus. Now, I'm going to tell you something. This is my tongue won't work. It's a statistical anomaly. If you look at your prison populations throughout the country, it tends to be about 60% African American. 66, maybe, give or take. Our largest portion is white, 46%. African Americans make up only 28% of our population in prison here. That's a statistical anomaly. Not that there's anything wrong with it. 21% are Hispanic, 2% are Asian, 2% are Native, and then we got that 1% there that really don't know who they are yet. They are undetermined. They're probably still deciding. Our custody levels, when you look at it, 2% of our maximum security. Those are everybody that's up in Ely. 23% are close custody. That's like halfway between medium and maximum. More maximum than medium. 60% of our population is medium custody, and only 15% of our population is minimum. We actually have a bed space availability in minimum custody. We don't have the prisoners that can fill criteria to meet it. Our distribution of our sentences, 78% of them are doing a sentence that's other. And when I talk about other, it's indeterminate, like 5 to 10 years, 1 to 6, whatever the judge gave them. So that's the majority of our prisoners. 16% of them have life with the possibility of parole. I don't know what the minimum number here is. In this day, it's probably something like 10 years. One year is parole. Probably going to make it out after about 20, I would say. 3%, almost 4%, have that life without the possibility of parole. Meaning you're going to do all day long. Right? And then less than 1% have a death sentence. Are out of Ely, right? Why do we do programs for inmates?
They get out.
Yeah, they're going to get out. Like I said, I want them to be taxpayers too. You know, I really do. If you think about it, we really need a program with them because a lot of them have no skills. You know, your mama and your daddy taught you how to balance a checkbook, right? I didn't learn real well in the beginning, but I caught on, right? These guys never have. Right? Nobody's ever taught them that. You know, you like that filet tonight? Yeah. Well, that means if I'm going to have a filet with all the fixings, I guess I'm going to have that bony skin sandwich a couple of days out of the week, right? That's something they've never figured out. And so we got to teach them. You know, I always talk about, it says no marketable skills. I'm going to tell you a bull crap on that right now. A lot of prisoners have marketable skills. We just have to redirect them. Everybody, anybody see the commercials for the new movie, White Boy Rick? Matthew, I know White Boy Rick. White Boy Rick was a 15-year-old white boy in Detroit running all the cocaine. You tell me he doesn't have a marketable skill? He does. He's got to redirect him a little bit, right? He really does. I mean, at 15 years old, and that was when Detroit was the murder capital of the country. Think about a little 15-year-old white boy. If you know anything about Detroit, and a little white boy like that running that thing, and he was a little white boy, about this tall. More prisoners are maxing out. And what that means really is we have more of them on an indeterminate sentence, like if I got a 2 to 4 year sentence. I've already done a couple stupid things in prison, so I'm not going home at 2 year mark. I'm going to stay for my 4 years. Because if I stay for my 4 years, we as a department can't control it. They parole is kind of like a choke chain on a dog. If you're going to act like a fool, we can yank on that chain a little bit, right? If they leave maxing out, I can't do anything to them. They can go right back to where they were, back to the life that they led in the past. Longer sentences means less community connection. I always talk about two things when I talk about this. One of them's the president, and one of them's one of my favorite movies, Shawshank Redemption. Remember when Brooks got out, didn't know what the heck to do, and ended up killing himself? Think about how long that man was in prison. Go to the flip side of that, you remember George Bush, the first George Bush, the press made fun of him when he was trying to get reelected as a president because he didn't understand what a scanner was at a store. Think about that. There's a man that was a vice president for 8 years, president for 4 years, a U.S. ambassador prior to that. You think he did any grocery shopping? No.
Hillary doesn't know how to drive a car.
Well, that could be.
She never had?
Yeah.
She didn't have a life?
Yeah. And there was no need. You know, that's the whole thing. If you look at him now, think about a prisoner. The only time they've ever seen one of these is on TV. They don't understand that I have the whole world in my hand right here, right now. You know? So there's a whole lot of things that they have a lack of connection with. They have real no understanding about. No adequate housing. Like we have prisoners, as they parole, we don't allow them to go certain places, right? Because they might be child molesters. So we don't allow them near school. So they have a hard time finding housing. Lack of treatment and prescriptions on public assistance. You know, basically, these guys are at the bottom of the barrel. We got to get them out of that barrel. They can't even be done, right? That's why they need all this help. And we know that treatment does work. Right? National studies have proven that interventions can reduce recidivism upwards of 30%. Cost effective in the long term. Like when I left Michigan, it was $45,000 a year to lock a man up. That was the average. Think of it, we'll save a few of them. Right. And we're not talking about just any treatment, it has to be proven treatment. Like when we first started this in Michigan, you could do anything you want, like basketball weaving classes, but there was no data that it worked. That's what we're really looking at, is stuff that truly works. How do we affect change? We address and correct criminal thinking, right? And realistically, the world of corrections has changed, right? We need to demonstrate proper behavior and actions. 30 years ago, if I would have been standing up here telling you that, I'd have been straight up lying to you, right? Because I was a knuckle dragger at one time. I was a dinosaur, but I have evolved, right? And everyone's been evolved, right? We do, and basically, right, I need to be the changes I wish to see in the world, right? If I want you to act right, I need to act right. I don't need to get down in the gutter with you and play the dozens with you all day long. I can do it. Damn good at it, too. But I shouldn't do that, right? I want that man or woman to elevate themselves, right? We do impose conflict. Full sanctioned justice war. You're acting like an idiot in prison, we're going to raise your security level up, which means you get less privilege. Right? You get locked up longer during the day. Third acting right. Consequences of your rewards, more time out of your cell, we move you to a lower custody level. And now how our facilities work, realistically, we do use control, keep order and discipline, and instill discipline. And a lot of these guys here, this is the first time they ever heard the word no, and it really meant something. And no before meant I'm just going to take it from you anyway, right? If you don't give it. We demonstrate role-playing and role modeling. And I don't need down to their level. You know, I can't, like I said, if you look at the language, there's no need for that language, right? I don't want to elevate this because I should be a role model to everybody. Programs that we do, and obviously you're all involved in, you know. Yes, sir.
But is there a constant contradiction between the good and the evil inside that facility? You know what I'm saying?
There always is.
Okay.
Yeah, prison's an evil place. It's a bad place.
But if you're trying to do something that is good for you and good for trying to get you out, right?
Yeah.
But there's always somebody in the way to stop you.
Oh, there always is.
Usually yourself.
Well, there's a people that bring you down, too. There's people that bring you down, too. You'll do something to them, but you can't control.
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't hurt. Substance abuse, like I said, religious and spiritual services. Right, we can't provide every service. There's a department, and we have one chaplain per facility. And right, we can't hire an imam, you know, a rabbi, so on and so forth, a priest. So that's why the volunteers come into play. Right? Same with educational and vocational training. Some of the things that occur in mental health. counseling, therapy, our intake assessment. When you go to prison, it's not like you just go to prison, right? It's a battery of tests that we run on you. It takes weeks. Right? They'll do IQ testing, mental health testing. They'll go through their entire background, what's their highest educational level, figure out who they are. You know, talk about their entire life history, right? So we know who they are and what we can do for them. And then our reentry and transitional services. Right, this is a reentry center we're in right now. We want to help people back out into the real world. Right? Most everyone here, if you've eaten a meal on the strip, everyone's probably done that, right? A convicted felon cooked for you, I will tell you, probably. Most of them work down here. And a lot of them make more money than I do. And I'm going in here doing shakedowns, and there's a guy with Gucci stuff. I'm going, what the heck? But he can afford it. Maybe not his best decision in the world, but he can afford it. Here's in our life, our reentry here at Casa Grande. So where they do the life skill training, interviewing, job applications, job placement, continuing ed, vocab. And right next door is a big computer classroom, and obviously they use this one too. Let's see. Now let's talk about some of our guidelines for volunteering. Firm, fair, and consistent. You got to be that way. And when I say firm, fair, and consistent, what I want you to be is the same person every time. One thing a convicted felon cannot stand is when Todd Dunn comes in one day, because Todd Dunn had a really bad day, I fought with everybody on the outside world, and I'm an asshole, for lack of better words. And I treat him like crap. Then the next day I come in, because I had such a great day off, they call me the State Puff Marshmallow Man, right? He doesn't know how to do it. I'm an asshole one day, for lack of better words, and I'm the nicest guy in the world the next. Now, there's no way for him to know. He wants me, and they do it. Just like you want everybody you deal with to be the same way every day. Yes, sir?
I'm a judge, probation officer, and a policeman. That most criminals, that you do what you want, you don't have anybody to buy. Yeah. They see it. They don't have a ticket to the traffic. And they do it over and over again. What's going on there?
What's going on there?
Yeah.
The lack of upbringing.
Well,
there's that. Man has his own free will.
Yeah, I can't have anything.
Well, a lot of them don't. One of the neatest places I have ever been was Pittsburgh Correctional Facility in Ontario, Canada. It's actually a minimum security prison. But when you get into it, well, like we're saying, they don't know that they shouldn't be taking stuff. They actually live 6 men to a, it's basically a condominium complex. 6 men to a condo. The government gives them each $6 a day to eat. They have to come up with their menu. And then they're starting to learn these things. That, like I said before, I need to eat bologna today. It's a learning process too, you know. I mean, there's a lot of times I thought, man, I'd really like to be a thief. Honestly, the one time I was, a guy that was like the surrogate father to me was, his name was Ryle Perry, if you're into baseball. He's got an MVP from the weight ring from the World Series. He gave it to his son, and it's sitting on his son's dresser. I'm going, if I could be a thief, that's what I would steal. But I just can't do it. It's just not my DNA, you know. I wanted to steal it, but I just couldn't. Follow our rules and policies, right? We have them there for a reason. Right? Recognize the chain of command, right? We are a paramilitary organization. We have a chain of command here. You know, if you have a problem, now it doesn't mean you have to go, well, I got to go talk to the boss. You talk to any one of us. You go to the department, we will get you the one way to do it with the problem. We need you to report incidents to ship command. Now, let's say that Prisoner Johnson threatens you. Right, during your group, at the start of your group, but you're going to be in there all day long, and you don't say anything until you leave 6 hours later, you come up to the ship commander, what do you think I would say to
you?
If you really weren't threatened, were you? Because if you were really threatened, you would come talk to me now, and I would deal with the problem now. Right, so when it says report to ship commander, report to the first person, and have a problem. I'll get a couple officers over here and we'll deal with the problem, right? And don't wait. Comply with our commands and our orders and directions. You know, you might be getting ready to close your session down, if you're there for AA, NA, whatever you're there for, and all of a sudden the officer comes in about 15 minutes early. Says, we gotta leave right now. Well, I'm almost done. No, if the officer tells you to leave, it's time to leave. There's a reason we're having you leave. You know, we're not doing it to be mean. There might be a problem somewhere else in the facility and we're trying to lock it down. Treat everybody, including inmates, with respect at all times and expect the same. Right. My name is Mr. Dunn. You can call me sir, you can call me Mr. Dunn, you can call me Dunn. If you're a convicted felon, you will not call me Tom. Right. You will not try to, and it's up to you and what your group is, but I do not touch prisoners. I don't shake hands with them. That, I'm different than you, right? Some of you are here for religious reasons, religious details. For me, it's not. Have cultural awareness and sensitivity. Do we all come from different places? Yeah. I can actually argue we all come from the same place. Because we do. Right? We all come from Kenya, if you want to think about it. Cradle of civilization. That's an argument I probably would not make and watch. Because right? I'm smart enough not to do something like that. But it's true. We come from different places, but we're all still alike. Professional conduct at all times. Like it says, we don't get down into the gutter. I don't get down and play the dozen with them. I want to raise them up. Report schedule changes their institution and administration. If something happens in your life, you're a volunteer, right? I can't make you do anything realistically, can I? Not a dang thing. If you want to come, you'll come. If you don't want to come and help us, you won't come. But the only thing we want to know is if you aren't going to come because something happened in your life, like, hey, I got a flat tire, you know, I'm sick, whatever it is, please let us know as early as possible. Right? Because if we get a detailed prisoner up and get them moving and get them somewhere, and now all of a sudden you're not going to be there, and now I got to get them all the way back. And that's not always an easy, it's like herding cats, like they say, right? Notify us of any relationship you might have with an inmate. We do have zero tolerance for sexual harassment. Pre-ups called, we'll talk about that at length later. And we need to dress appropriately for prison. Okay. We'll talk about the fashion faux pas, our gate control, bringing things in, and other considerations. When you look at our gate control, getting in and out, that officer that runs that gate, for lack of better words, is God. Right? Their decision is final. Right. Fashion attire in the wrong way, ladies. Gentlemen. A proper dress. No blue jeans. Like I said, no blue clothing. No blue shoes. I don't know why anyone would ever wear sandals. I always like to wear boots in prison. No see-through clothing. No tank tops. No midriffs. No halter tops. Let's go back blue. Like I said, that gate officer is God. This gentleman right here, see that shirt he's wearing? What color would you call that shirt?
Turquoise.
Is that blue?
Turquoise.
I wore a shirt like that, and that was blue.
Blue enough that you won't get in.
That is. Blue enough you will not get in. So remember, they are God. I had to take my shirt off and a white t-shirt on underneath when I went in the first time. All right, confidential, let's see, correspondence. We'll talk about correspondence, confidentiality, our website, and our inmate rights. A correspondence, never mail anything for a convicted felon. We go through the mail, both incoming and outgoing. Right? So if you mail something for a prisoner, you've just subverted our systems. Right? As a matter of fact, where I used to work, Marquette Branch Prison, we housed federal prisoners. Everyone's probably heard about Florence, Colorado, the Supermax, a tough place. When they can't handle somebody, you know where they send them? Marquette Branch Prison. And one of the reasons is we can control things that they couldn't control. Right? We can control the mail, like all federal prisoners, their mail didn't go the normal route. We boxed all their mail up and it went to the U.S. Probation Office. They went through it because that was one of the big problems, the feds couldn't control their mail. Don't send mail to inmates, right, unless it's approved, right? If it's something to do with your group, that's fine. But we're not sending them little letters to say, hey, I miss you, can't wait to see you in the group again, you know, things like that. Telephones, inmates are not allowed to use our telephones whatsoever. And once again, that's security. Their phones are recorded. Ours are not. Well, ours are too after a short period of time. We don't make calls for convicts. We don't allow or accept calls from inmates or their families. If you get a phone call or something like that at home, you need to let us know. We can deal with that. How many of you, speaking of this, how many of you have ever been on a website called FamilyTreeNow.com? I think it is. FamilyTreeNow.com. I would suggest you go there.
Been where?
FamilyTreeNow.com. I think it's FamilyTree. It's either FamilyTree or FamilyTreeNow. I can't remember. Because I'm already out of it. I can go there, put your name in there, put Las Vegas, Nevada, if that's where you live, and I will have your phone number. I will have your address. If you're married, I'll have your wife or husband's phone number if they have a cell phone. If you have children, I'll also have their phone numbers if they have cell phones. Yeah, it's it is. It's very scary. So you need to go there and get rid of it. Because you can opt out of the system. When you go through it, you can opt your name out of it.
What's it called, Family Tree?
Family Tree Now, I think it is. It's either Family Tree or Family Tree Now. Plus, you could also, on Facebook, I don't know, that's the only thing I got, I don't even use that with those other things, Snapchat or, you know, whatever they got. Whatever they are, young people help me out.
Instagram.
Yeah, all that stuff. You need to check your privacy settings on it. Right, this is just like the old commercials, what happens here stays here, right? What you see there has to stay in that facility. Right, we are, confidentiality is crucial to our mission. Right, we are guided by HIPAA and FERPA laws, which are both educational and the healthcare. But if I know something about somebody, it's confidential. Don't ask inmates about their crime or actually allow them to discuss them with you. All of our information is open to the public. You can review it. I would probably recommend you wouldn't. It's up to you, though. Because once you start reading what some of these people do to other people, you'll have a whole different light or outlook on them, right? And it's not positive. All right, inmate rights. Do they have rights?
Sure.
Yeah. They got the same rights that you and I have, right? Constitutionally, right? They're guaranteed by the federal government through the Bill of Rights. Constitution, just like you and I. State Constitution, our administrative code, or the NAC is called, and then our agency policy and procedures guarantee their rights. Just like us, out on a free world, they are free from discrimination based on the race, religion, national origin, on and on. They're free from cruel and unusual punishment. The right to religious freedom. Right to reasonable and prudent care. That's where a lot of the general public gets mad, because sometimes prisoners get better health care than we do. But think about their ward of the state. They can't go anywhere else. I'm required to take care of them, right? Right to due process and access to the courts. And then the right to send and receive mail. Now what they give up, the biggest thing they give up, obviously, is freedom. No longer go hang out with somebody, go to sleep at 2 in the afternoon, get back up and go out at 10 o'clock at night. We're going to tell you when to get up, we're going to tell you when to eat, we're going to tell you when to go to bed, we're going to tell you when to take a shower, we're going to tell you everything, right? You give all your free stuff like that. You have the right to free assembly, right? Because if we get too many people together, we have a problem, right? Like Mama used to say, I don't mind the devil workshop, right? How many of it? Prisoners, does it take to make a riot?
What?
Prisoners, does it take to make a riot?
Oh, riot. What?
Five.
We can start it.
Trust me, it takes five. I've been in court, federal court, for this court. You have the right to vote. Right? They are disenfranchised now. They also can't have firearms. But depending on your crime in Nevada, they will re-enfranchise you after a certain amount of years, but it can't be for a violent crime. They give up the right to be free from search and seizure without probable cause. Could you imagine if every time I wanted to search a prisoner, I had to go to a judge and get a warrant? would be bad. The rights that they still keep, that they remain with, they're subject to modification, right, when conflicts with the security matters. The deal is, we have to end up, we'll end up in a court of law explaining to a judge why security takes precedence over their rights, guaranteed by the Constitution. As long as we can do it, we can modify their rights. Rights versus privileges, like it says, right is guaranteed to all inmates. It cannot be compromised for reasons, it can only be compromised by reasons related to security. And privileges are favors that we grant to prisoners, right, for various reasons. We can take those away. When you look at privileges, your custody level is a privilege. But you have minimum custody or maximum custody. Privileges can be taken away and rights cannot. Now, their responsibility, of course, the primary responsibility is uphold the rules of the agency. What do you think about that? You need to obey the law while you're in here. It doesn't always work, right? They need to keep themselves and their living area clean. They need to carry out legitimate work assignments. You realize that if you feel like you're living in the state of Nevada, you are not sentenced to years. You're sentenced to labor. 5 years of labor. I didn't realize that. It's one of the few remaining states that does. Okay, so what we talked about so far, appropriate facility, clothing, correspondence, telephone, inmate rights and responsibilities. Says it's time for a break. I think we can keep going, huh? Good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question. On the dress.
Nope. Okay. Go ahead. That slide's already gone. Question slide. No, go ahead, ma'am.
That was a privilege.
I had it taken away. If you wear a sleeveless dress, but you cover it with a lace or a sweater, is that okay?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
All right. You know,
first slabs.
Okay.
No, I'm sure, you know.
As long as it's not blue.
As long as it's not blue. No, I like dresses, but in prison I like the slabs.
Well, thank you, Alex. Commissioner, somebody else is right there. Do you want to be recognized here?
All right. What we're going to talk about is con games, inmate relations, contraband, my favorite, hostage policy, principles of security, inmate management, supervision, and workplace safety. At con games, if you actually look at the definition of a con, it takes honestly about 13 people to run a straight up con game. How many times are you going to run the door to a con and like that in prison with 13 people running it? About zero. One person's going to talk. Out of 13, someone's going to tell. So it's usually not nearly that, that's usually one or two people running a con, right, in prison. What you gotta remember too, with the con game is anybody is susceptible to it. If it feels wrong, it probably is. When I say that feels wrong, I'm gonna guess that probably every one of you ladies here, and maybe gentlemen too, but ladies, you should be able to understand where I'm coming from. Let's say you're out one evening with you and your lady friends, and all of a sudden some creepy kind of guy comes up and sits next to you, right? Ladies, you ever have that? If it feels wrong, it probably is. That is flavor flight, fight syndrome. It's been in our bodies since we were living in caves. And that's hair standing on the back of your head, getting that little adrenaline rush start to go. What's happening is your body is saying it's either time to run or it's time to fight. Okay, so if it feels wrong, it probably is. And when in doubt, ask. We don't grant any special privileges or favors. Right? If something's not right, ask me before you do it. These are the people to stop what you're doing and to try to undo what you did. Like I said, don't grant special privileges. And one of my first sergeants, an individual guy by the name of Roger Taylor, he had this saying. It might take a couple seconds for it to sink in. But convict ain't got nothing coming, period. But what he does have coming, give. And I'm I'm not going to grant him anything special, but if he has this coming, I'm going to give it to him. What they got coming, give it. Techniques of setup. Observation. They're going to sit and watch.
They got nothing but time.
Yeah. They watch us, we watch them. I can listen to probably 2-3 conversations and interact in 2-3 conversations at one time because I'm trained to listen and hear things, right? They do the same thing. And when I say observation, if you're having a problem, say you're here with your partner, doing your group, 2 or 3 of them are always here. You're having this issue at home, so you're talking to your partner. Who else is listening? Oh, she's having problems with her marriage. Oh, this is my opportunity. Because I'm listening to you. I'm here. Body language. Body language is important. Are you someone that's always like this, looking around? Or are you someone who stands up tall as erect and looks like you're in charge? Like you're the cock of the walk, for the lack of better terms. I run that walk. I'm the guy that's going to run that walk. Right? It goes even as far as I didn't even realize it. The prison I worked at was built in 1886. Beautiful. Wow, you could almost live there. It looks like a castle. We operated, like I said, we ran a population that nobody else can supervise. We had a 30-foot wall and a 16-foot fence. On top of that 30-foot wall, anywhere I walked, there was a gun on my back. And so we handled people that nobody else could handle. But having said that, once a year we would lock the family down and allow the family to come in. And my wife told me one time, well, and she goes, you know, you change when you walk in. I said, what do you mean? She goes, just the way you walk. Well, this is my place. I got to act like I'm that guy, right? Listening, that's all they do is listen. Just like us, all we do is listen to them too. And they'll react to what you're saying and doing, right? Correct. Walk. Well, you got walk. Now, the selection of a victim. Friendliness. Why are you all here to begin with? Because you're here to help people, right? You are friendly. God bless you for it. What for you, we couldn't do half the things we do, right? But your nature alone starts to help you become a victim, you know, unfortunately and unwillingly and unknowingly, right? It's like nursing staff. They got into that line of work to help people, right? And they get hooked up into it. Naivete of what's occurring around you. Maybe get familiar, over-familiar with something. Tolerance level, right? And will you overlook minor violations in your personality, right? Familiarity. We've talked so far, I'm here to be professional. Can I be somewhat familiar with them? A little bit?
Yeah, somewhat.
Yeah. If this gentleman here is a prisoner, I just happen to know that he's really going to be a golden knight. I love him. So when we first come in, I spent a minute or two talking to him about the game last night. How do you know we're familiar? No, I'm building a rapport, right? This is somebody I need to work with. Now, if I sat here for a whole hour talking to the game, that's over familiar, right? Boom, you're into this. I'll talk to you for a couple seconds. You're talking about what you'll allow people to say in your presence. You know, what type of words, what type of jokes, right? You would tolerate these things. You overlook minor violations? I'm okay with that to some extent, right? We have the same ability as a street officer, right? Let's think about discretion in the city of Las Vegas. You really got to be doing something stupid to get a traffic ticket in this town, don't you? We're extremely unlucky, because they're busy doing other things, right?
Yeah,
so they have the discretion to just watch go by. Not to go 80 miles an hour down that street, you're going to get that ticket, right? You're done, and you're going to get it. You know, 50, they're not going to bother you. But we have the same ability in prison. I see you doing something. When I overlook something, this lady here is a prisoner doing something wrong, I stare at her like this for a couple seconds. think she knows I know she did something wrong?
Yeah.
I gave her what we used to call the Marquette stairs, right? No, you know you did something wrong. Tools in the setup that supports it. These are all different tools, different ways. Offers to help, you know. Hey, I know you're new here. Let me show you what's happening around here. This is the key that will open the door. These guys will be mean to you here, and this guy will do that. You know, possibly that pledge of devotion, expression of faith, empathy or sympathy, sharing of problems. And it really needs everyone to help. You know, that plea for help. You know, I have a lack of confidence, but I really want to change. I don't care what you tell me. You're the only one that's paying attention and understanding my problems, right? Louise A. said, this is one I despise because we do it to ourselves. We are a group of employees who ostracize somebody we don't like. And we will ostracize you terribly. I've been, in Michigan they fed this staff. I'd be in the officer's dining room, and there'd be an officer come in that the other officers didn't like, pour me into a table. He'd go sit down where 3 men are already sitting. They stand up and they walk away, middle of their lunch. Okay? So what are we really doing when we do that? If you want to look at it as we're the sheep, I'm helping call my herd to the wolves, aren't I? If I'm not going to talk to you, who else are you going to talk to all day long? Victor Felon, right? I don't want you dealing with him like that. I want you on my team. Like he says, we are we, and who are they? You know, we're two different sets of people, right? There's no duality in prison. And I can't work here, and then also there's no duality. Offer of protection, another tool set up. So don't worry, I'll take care of you. And I've even seen, like it says, staging of events or fights. Putting a little fear in somebody's head, right? Touch system. Right? Touch is extremely powerful. Really powerful, especially if you don't know. If I'm a prisoner, I walk up on this lady and I bump into her like that. I just touched her, right? In reality, when I do this, the kind of person that I do this, prisoners are not allowed to touch. That is assault. Now, if we're both walking down the road and as a prisoner, I accidentally bump into him, am I going to say, hey, bingo, I'm putting a pair of handcuffs on you and locking you up? Was it an accident? Yeah. I'm in my boat. They should not enter my space. Depending on who you are, like my bubble is what you call my eye or a safe distance. You hold your hand up for me like that? This is a safe distance for me. I see you. Social person come out. Okay? The rumor claim. do rumors run rampant in prison?
Okay.
Some of them are actually true. But they're everywhere, all the time. I was a member of I was the youngest lieutenant of Marquette Ranch Prison. Me and my partner, I didn't love that job because twice a day I got to walk the big yard. The state paid me to stay in shape, you know, because I'm walking 3 miles twice a day. I'm walking in the morning. All of a sudden, Jimmy Hale, a little rotten convict about that tall, I'm dead now, came up to me. What, Jimmy? You're going to afternoon shift. Well, I had all kinds of things to say to him. None of them were nice. Called him everything but a child of God right there, right? What happens about 5 minutes later?
Yeah.
My radio goes off. Control to Unit 1. Unit 1, go. Deputy wants to see you. I roll up into the Ivory Tower. I got to go find Jimmy Hale. He is. No, I didn't. Same time, you told my partner was walking up thinking, Mike, Luma, you're going afternoon shift too. Guess who they called for next? You're going afternoon shift. You know, some rumors are out there in prison. Some of them are true, a lot of them aren't. Some of them always have a little bit of truth in the rumor, the rest of it is whatever the hell I'm about. You make demands. All right, so I've set you up, I got the hook in you, I'm going to give you my shopping list. Might be money, might be drugs, might be alcohol. Might be sex, cell phones, and even escape. We've had people help people escape. Right? I don't know about Nevada, whether we've had that yet. I know we have in Michigan.
We've had Nevada.
We have? I believe it. The lever here comes, right? I've given you my list. And you say, I tell you you're going to do it or else. Come work for us anymore. And that should be the least, and it will be the least of your work, right? You risk losing that status in the community and work. You always call it the headline test, I believe, right? Possible criminal charges. Right. Like I said, if you think something's wrong, tell us. I can help you before it happens. Once it happens, I can't help you. I can help you find the money, but I'm always looking for a porter. Okay? Who charge, right? Tell whoever you see, we will come help you. And be aware of those classic signs that are out there. Stop any inappropriate behavior or language immediately. You shouldn't allow certain things. You shouldn't allow certain words to be said in front of you. Sexual jokes, none of that should be told in front of you. Stop it immediately. You will end up putting it in writing eventually. It says don't get involved in the activities beyond the reason for your being there. If you're there for AA and someone's asking you for marital help, that's not why you're there. Like it says there, use the headline test. When you read about us, when you do something wrong, okay? Could be that you haven't worked for us for 10 years. You're actually working at McDonald's now for the last 10 years. We fired you 10 years ago. That's a former corrections officer, arrested. He wasn't in the state burger flipper. Because that's what he did for the last 10 years. You know, since former corrections officer. You haven't worked for us for 10 years, but hey, we're going to call it that, right? Like it says, our relationships with them will only deal with authorized relationships and only with the inmates in your group. Right? Other inmates, I'm not there to make friends. I'm dealing with these inmates. Doesn't mean that if an inmate comes in my group, while they're walking by me, I can say hi to them. That's fine. Hey, Jones, how you doing? But I'm not going to sit there and have a great conversation with them. Right? Sponsor events. If you're volunteering, we allow you to sponsor events. You know, like, hey, anybody here for anything? You have milestones, right? You celebrate those milestones. You allow that. But you can't say, well, hey, we're having a cake here today. We're bringing a cake in. You've got to let us know things like that. I've been watching the movies. That's what a pile is. That pile is coming out. Transactions. We don't do any transactions between families or individuals. Undue familiarity. You should not know more about you. They should know more about you. I'm here to help you if you're not here to help me. Like I said before, we have duality. There is no duality in corrections. Handshakes and hugs, depending on what you're volunteering for, limited contact between adult volunteers and inmates is encouraged, right? We have pre-consideration of what we will talk about later, right? Contraband. What is contraband? It's any article not issued by or purchased at a correctional facility. Something that is not obtained through approved methods, having excessive allowed items. Now, we don't allow excessive allowed items. You know, I might sell ramen or I might sell food in the store. We can't teach you, we don't allow excessive amounts. Because what that prisoner is actually doing is running his own store. If you have excessive property, I can't protect you. Right, we have fire suppression systems for a reason. You could overload that, not to mention cleanliness. And I hate bugs, cooties, and stuff like that running around. And we got them out of the desert. They're everywhere, aren't they? That's just really some of them. We got goats, all of this stuff. All right, now, why it's important for us to find it? It is a threat to our security. Right? We can have escapes. There's fights over property. Like I said, fires. You're not fire. I can't protect you. Very unsanitary. That's contraband, either weapons, escape items, alcohol, drugs, gambling items, cell phones. Right? We have various types of weapons. We've got shanks, clubs, zip guns, rocks in the sock, lock on sock, melted toothbrushes. What they do is melt the razor blade into the toothbrush, with a slicing instrument, slingshots. Blow guns, razor blades. I've seen nunchucks made out of paper that would knock you out. And rolled so thick and so tight. I've actually seen a zip gun made out of paper that fired and broke the bulletproof window with a bolt. I think the coolest one I ever saw was the lock of a sock. We had a huge fight on the yard. I thought for a minute there I was going to die. There was more of them than there was us. And bottom line, but all of a sudden done. One guy died, they held him up, half his face was just blown out, and the other half was looking normal. Let's lock him up and we'll figure out who he was fighting with. Well, he ends up having his hearing. I didn't like this convict anyhow, so I kind of got to laugh afterwards. You got to realize a weapon knows no master. He had a lock and a sock. He swung it at the guy. The guy ducked. Where that lock went. He knocked himself out. I kind of liked it. Those are probably either oven racks or could be mop handles. Handcuff keys, handmade keys. dummies, ropes, cords, ID, cell phone, tools, and unauthorized clothing. There's a, we have a dummy at Marquette Branch Prison. Actually, it's housed in the Michigan Historical Society. We take it back 2 weeks out of the year. All it is a bare hand and a face. I believe it was so realistic. It's an open bar facility, and as I'm walking, looking at you, making my round, it looks like the eyes on that dummy are following you. So you're thinking, yeah, he's alive, he's living in there, he's looking at me, he's staring at me right now. Alcohol. We have homemade alcohol. It is the nastiest thing you have ever seen. We end up finding it because of the smell. When it starts to ferment. Fruit oil, sponge juice, all you need is a little fruit, some bread, some sugar, maybe a little yeast, because we make most of our own breads. We need a little bit of it, and then it just got to percolate. And it stinks. A gambling item, right? They have old cards, money, chips, betting slips. They have parlays, tickets in prison, just like they have on a strip. Brought in from the facility from outside, and believe it or not, our own staff, visitors, volunteers, contractors, lawyers, they don't guard the police, lawyers may not always be on the up and up, but they also, some of it is manufactured from within, mailed in, like mail drugs in, liquid drugs right on the back of a stamp, things like that, and the newest threat is drones. Hasn't really hit here in Nevada yet. I think the last year in Michigan they actually came up with a drone passport. And three drops in about a 3 month period. How they move contraband. Right? Think about it. Inmates do all the work. Right? They're the ones that have access to the facility. If I work in the kitchen, but I gotta bring the food over to this unit, I'm bringing the contraband with me as I go in that food cart. Right? Porters, they move things around for people to clean, right? Like it says, on inmates. Food delivery, laundry delivery, inside inmates. Right? I used to have a prisoner at Marquette, his name was Blood Denim. Blood had two things he loved to do. He loved to throw feces and urine on us. Great. Everyone got to have a hobby, right? But he also, when he moved from downstate to upstate, he used what he called a suitcase to move his contraband. The suitcase was his rectum, obviously. He got so bad that he had to throw it out. Not out of cruel and unusual punishment on our part, but he ruined his rectum by stuffing stuff up in there. But think about the outcome of that. You got a guy that likes to throw doo-doo on you. And now all of a sudden I basically gave him a bazooka right here, right, with that colostomy bag. Mm-hmm. You know? So you gotta look at the downside. You got a bazooka now. Contraband control, right? We can't stop it all. It's just impossible. But we try to control it. Right? We control it by pat searches, strip searches, cell searches, being observant, and then just remaining vigilant. See things that aren't looking like they even should be. That's usually what happens. Here's some shakes. The one on the left is just wall pipe. The one on the right made from mop frames and mop handles. We've actually changed, prisons now change their mops. Everything you have now is plastic. We're no longer getting my ring. Yeah, think about that ring. That ring is like now it's just a bowl that they have to turn the mop and get it to squeeze itself, right? Handcuff keys, those are a bunch of cool shanks. I think up the top I would say those look like file holders. The middle ones look like fences, you know, like other fences. It looks like some paint. Take a styrofoam cup, 30 minutes. like I said, not everything is what it looks like. You look at that top left-hand corner and go to the right. You see that nice seat there in the cell? You get up close and you can actually build yourself a little shelf in there and crack the weld on it. And built that little shelf that shouldn't be in there when you go to the bottom right. Who usually finds something like that, do you think? Someone who's brand new in that facility or brand new in that unit. I can look at that thing right away. So it comes in and release, maybe you can do it, but hey, that doesn't look right. Look on the left, it looks like ramen noodles. On the right, there was this little compartment for hiding this contraband, right? That's what he had in it. Just a little bit of drugs, huh? Hostage policy! My favorite, right? All right. What is a hostage? Someone who is being held against their will, right? One or more persons held by an inmate or another individual against their will. Now let me ask you a question. Is she my hostage? Is that taking her?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What am I doing to her? When I get her behind this door, and I got the door shut, now she's my hostage.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah, so my, and when I'm talking about this, this is a decision you have to make. It might not be within her best interest to fight, right? Depending on what she knows. Or it might be, hey, you ain't dragging me in that closet without a fight. Trade or bargain in any way, power, like it says, weapons, alcohol, drugs, other boys in trade, or will they be not be permitted to leave the institution under any conditions? Now these are caveats, right? Room and he wanted, I can't remember what kind of drug he wanted, but it was a heavy hit in our time. We thought about it, and we thought about it, we talked about it. He had a nurse hostage. We gave him a dope.
Knocked him out.
He shot himself up. He fell asleep. Hey, how are you down there? I'm here to put a pair of handcuffs on you. Never be permitted to leave the institution under any conditions. We had a hostage situation. The guy wanted to go to Milan, Michigan, which is one federal state. If you take me to Milan, I'll give the hostage up. Cool. We'll do that. Chain him up, put him in a transportation vehicle, drove to Milan, Michigan, through the driveway, turn back and come home. What are you doing? Well, we didn't promise we'd leave you there. We promised to take you there. We held our end of the bargain. Now you're going back home, son. There's several different kinds. Mental instability of an inmate might be the problem. Overcrowded conditions might be why they're trying to take a hostage. Means to air grievance. This might be the only way they think they can get somebody to hear their problem. Right? Fleeing criminals, I'm not really concerned about that because I know where you're fleeing. You're going to a housing unit. You're a wrong person, a death wish, suicide by cop, might be a plan to escape. Religious or political fanatics is one way to start to get that. Situations, talk about the risk of being a hostage, that moment of capture. What to do, not do, a survival guide. The captivity, and the moment of rescue. All right, the moment of capture. This is the most dangerous time. I'll tell you about 15 to 45 minutes, I'm going to the first hour, that hostage taker really has the upper hand. Okay? They're the ones you control at that point. And it's volatile time of a hostage situation. And if I can get you past that first 45 minutes, first hour, I got never. And think about adrenaline. If I hold a knife to your neck, what is your heart going to do all of a sudden? Yeah. It's going about 150 miles an hour, right? Think what it takes for me to hold a knife to your neck. What do you think my heart's doing? Yeah, that's why it's the most dangerous time. Because I'm hyped up, I'm hopped up, I don't know what the hell is happening. You know, I got a battle plan and I hope it works, right? Is it obvious? Your weapons involved. Once again, depending on who you're dealing with, you may or may not want to fight. Provocation for violence, right here and right now, right? And realistically, escape may not be realistic at this point. Like I said, that odds, right here, the odds favor this hostage taker. Survival? Like I said, first they say they need a 45 gun. I'm going with the first hour, so it's the most critical for me. Now this is a real good one. Don't panic, even though it's been a nice year's run. You'll be okay, trust me on this one, right? But realistically, you don't want to panic. Because anything I do, think about this, first 45 minutes, he's hyped up. If I'm freaking out, he's going to freak out, right? I want to comply with their wishes. I don't want to change clothing with my captors or be blindfolded, right? I don't want to change clothing because when a team comes in to rescue you, I'm looking for things in blue, okay, to shoot at. And you're wearing blue. I don't want to be blindfolded for several reasons. The biggest one is I want them to see me. I want them to know that I am a human being. And it's easy for me to think of you as a piece of steak or a piece of meat to beat you up. When I see you as a human being, that's a harder thing for me to do, right? And I want to humanize myself the best I can. You want to maintain a quiet dignity. Right? When I do that, I'm not involved with whatever their demands are. I'm not their hostage negotiator, right? I'm not going to give them ideas. But at the same point, I'm going to be quiet, keep my dignity about me, but I'm also going to be looking. You know, if I didn't know something, I said, ooh, there's Jones over there. I'm not going to go, oh, hey, Jones. I'm going to pretend like I don't know you. Well, what you're telling me when I get out here, you're involved in this. Try to establish a good line of communication. Once again, I want to humanize myself. I want to be a human. Right, to improve our survival odds, I need to remain calm. Control our instinctive behaviors. Follow their instructions and create a non-threatening image and avoid personal injury. Remain calm. How am I going to do that?
You control your breathing.
I'm going to control my breathing.
Don't overact.
Yeah. Anybody ever watch that movie, Happy Gilmore? I'm going to my hat. Control my breathing. What I'm going to do is what I would call combat breathing. We can do it right now, a couple of them. What I want you to do is breathe in through your nose for 2 seconds. Now hold that breath for 2 seconds. Now exhale it through your mouth. Do that a couple times. See, what I'm doing here is I'm controlling my breathing, calming my heart, right? I'm also making sure that I am breathing, get my whole respiratory tract involved so I'm not hyperventilating and freaking out, right? I'm instinctive behaviors. You're no longer in charge, so don't act like it. You need to follow their instructions within reason. You want to create that non-threatening, continual wall. Avoid personal injury. It says anyone could become a victim. It's a long-term issue. Living conditions are changing. You're now the lowest of the low. You're going to have fear. You're going to have time on your hands. Boredom. Isolation. Dehumanization. And you're going to have to figure out how to deal with that. Might be something as simple as if I'm in this cell all day long and I know you're coming for me at some point, I might start counting. How high can you count? Maybe I can get the gazillion or something. But I'm doing something, right? keeping my mind active. Might be something from your childhood you remember, a little game, right? And your living conditions, like I said, you're the lowest level, and it's not going to be good, period, because what's going to happen in a hostage situation, honestly, like I said, you have about 15 to 45 minutes up to an hour, I would say, give you an hour that they have the upper hand. At that point, when someone like me comes in, and we come to get you, I'm going to start to control your environment. You're not going to like it. I'm going to close your entire environment off. It's hot out in the desert, right? Might become extremely hot in that cell for a while. Then I might get a real poke in that cell for a while. Might give you some light. Might let you listen to some awesome rock music at high volumes. I'm going to control that entire environment. I am taking control away from that hostage state. That's not going to be fun. And it says maintain your dignity, keep a good appearance, playfulness, positive attitude, control your stress. Remember, go to that happy place. At the time of rescue, it says drop to the floor. I want you to get to the floor, and I want you to get to the floor. Don't stand up. Don't say, hey, this is me. Right? You've got a team of 3 to 5 individuals busting through that door, handguns drawn, looking to shoot somebody if I need to. You stand up like this, guess what's going to happen? You're probably going to get shot. Right? Avoid sudden moves. Follow our instructions. When we come busting through a door, drones try to assist us, you should expect that we're going to handle you roughly. You should expect that I'm going to put a pair of handcuffs on you too. And I don't know who you really are. I don't know what I'm really dealing with. Allegedly, I'm dealing with a hostage situation, right? In the end, I might find out that what I really found was two lovers who got caught in the act, and this is the way they said, hey, let's do this, and like I took you hostage, and we'll be okay, right? So I don't know what I'm dealing with. Follow our instructions completely. Like I said, don't be sudden moves, no noises, rough handling. Expect that to put their handcuffs on you once we find out what the real deal is. They're coming off you. We'll take care of you. You're going to get all the medical and mental help you need, and we'll get you debriefed, right? But right to that first 5 minutes. And like I said, remain calm. Maintain your dignity. Control instinctive behaviors. Follow those instructions. Treat that non-threatening image and avoid personal injury. And like I said, don't give up hope. Because we're coming for you. We talk about long-term. You're not going to be in there long. Six times a day. Right? It's pretty important that we keep everybody here, right? The informal counts officers are doing informal counts all the time. They need to know where the prisoners in their units are. The 6 formal counts is what we do a day where we lock the entire prison down and there's no movement. We also, with security, do key control, right? General working keys. There are restricted keys where some people can't get because they're very professional. Only few people really allow them. We're the government. We love redundancy. I'm not just going to have one key. I'm going to have several, and one set's going to be an emergency key. If something's happening in the unit, I'm running there, I'm going to stop by control, grab those keys, so I know I can get in when I get to the other end. Okay. All right, inmates, supervision. Firm, fair, and consistent. Supervision is the ability to deal with do what you want done, right? When you want it done, how do you want it done? Think about our population, getting them to do things on a daily basis, getting people who don't want to do things to do them on a daily basis. Constantly. Some things you got to know is job knowledge, self-confidence, consistent treatment, ability to communicate, recognize individual differences, correct and praise, and be patient. Job knowledge. Do I need to know what a quarter note? Not necessarily, right? I don't need to know how to put on a wax. I sure don't want to know how to run one of them buffers. Because every time I've ever tried to run one of them buffers, the buffer ran me. It wasn't me running nothing. It was running me all over the place. Yeah. They will, too. I don't need to know that. What I do need to know when I talk about job, Alex, is how long does it take him to do this job? Like, if I... go 45 because he's a prisoner. They're going to be slower than everyone else. Nobody knows what he's out about. All of a sudden, he's still in here 2.5 hours later. What's going on here, right? Something going on. He shouldn't be in here that long. And so I do need to know those things about it. Consistent treatment. Herm very consistent. Treat everybody the same way. It should vary every day. Like I said, you don't want to be a jerk one day and the same pop market the man the next day. Roger Taylor, convict ain't got nothing coming, but what he does have coming, give him, right? He's very consistent. No penalties, community. You got to keep your directions simple and clear. Right? When you look at our population nationally, I think our average is like fourth grade reading level in prison. Doesn't mean that, do we have some smart people in prison? Yeah, my last word was engineer. Kind of smart, you know. Quarter after him was a sommelier. But he can't help me with wine, though, can he? But when you think about the fourth grade reading level, I have to make my corrections simple. If I'm making a round as an officer and I have a guy that has three or four things that I need him to do, this is task list, I want you to do these five things. Probably not going to work real well, really. You think about a person with a fourth grade education, I'm going to give him one direction. When I come back on my next round, I want all of this off of your wall. Do you understand me? Yes, sir. All right, cool. Come back. All right, now what I need you to do is I'll give him another direction. Right? Very simple directions. If I give him complex directions, he's going to be spinning like a top. Right? He's not going to work. So do you tailor your directions, right? Do you criticize? Should I criticize? Can I criticize a convict? Yeah. Am I going to do it in front of all his peers, though? He says, you clarify when it's not. Provide correct directions and instructions. So I want to ask you to understand what I'm telling you to do. Yes, sir. I go, okay, what am I asking you to do, sir? Well, you want me to take all this paper off my wall. Very good. You understand me. I'll see you in a few minutes, all right? Correct and praise. Correct and praise people a lot in the Department of Corrections?
Correct?
Yes.
Well, we correct them, but we don't praise them very often, man.
Well, we don't.
And that's the problem. You know, I think statistics tell you should be like one kick in the butt for 10 hours. It's ingrained in our culture, unfortunately. We're changing it, but it's ingrained. I'm expected to do my job right, 100% of the time. Where I work. If I do something wrong, I'll find a thing for my buddy, for my boss. They don't ever really tell you, hey man, you did a good job today. No, because we expected me to do a good job. It's a great in our culture. It's right. I'll let you know when you're doing it. Right? Probably praise is a motivator as long as it's not false. Right? If I tell you great job every day, after about 4 days, you're going to go, really?
Then the one day you don't hear it, it's like, what's wrong today?
Yeah.
Do you find out why assignments aren't completed? If you're volunteering for what you're doing. A lot of times people are too proud to tell you they have a learning disability, right? Maybe I really can't read. That's why I'm not doing it. I got a guy in my academy right now, he's failed every test. 3 tests in a row. I called him in, I said, you need to talk to me about some young man? Well, why are you failing? Well, I don't study. Well, I said, you better start studying. You're not going to have a job for very much longer. You respond or you react? There is a difference. Recognize change. Okay, we all change. We all evolve. Something's better, something's worse, right? Be objective when you're doing it. Like I said, each individual is unique. Treat them uniquely. as an individual. Recognize change. Everyone changes, like I said, some for the better, some for the worse. A lot of these guys don't really grow up till they get about 30. You know, they, like I said, are on the verge of being antisocial. And then they finally grow up. I remember seeing guys when I was in my younger years that love to fight with them, love to throw them down. 10 years later, they're out in the trustee division. And I'm looking at them, oh my God, what are you doing out here? Did we make a mistake? Well, then they said, well, I finally grew up. I finally realized I didn't want to spend my life here. Jobs according to ability, observe performance, correct immediately. Counsel, suggest that somebody do something, don't order. What is a suggestion? Oh, I find out that I can do this thing. What is that?
That's a suggestion.
I call it a veiled order.
Yeah.
I mean, if I tell you I'd like you to do this, when you say, no, I'm not going to do it, well, let me put you in another term. Shut the doors when you go. before using the fire extinguisher, right, you want to check your exits. Basically, what I'm trying to tell you is, don't paint yourself into a corner, right? Get a little 5-pound fire extinguisher, watch for smoke, and look for hazards. Some cut hazards, right? Some simple tool hazards, box knife, scissors, paper cutter, envelope openers, paper cuts. Right? Always look for your route for escape. If you look behind us, both these doors are illuminated with exit signs and emergency lighting. Every one of our facilities, just like right behind here, there is a diagram to tell you where your exit is. Get out. Reduce hazards, speak up when coworkers don't take emergency drills serious. Right? We do fire drills for a reason, so we know how to deal with it, right? Drive recklessly or use measures. Summary, you are responsible. Some hazards you can handle. You need to report the serious ones to us, though, right? And remember, be professional, use professional language, have a plan, avoid one-on-one situations. You shouldn't be in a room privately with a prisoner. There's safety in numbers, safety in control, simple commands when I give them directions. When you decide to act, move quickly, demand immediate compliance, don't get distracted, and never relax. Questions on that? I think we should take a break now. I'll take the one break. Bathroom, gentlemen, ladies,
I'm good.
I'll bet.